Chapter 5. Fears, release, innocence.
Husband?
Rhenia's hand on Yosef's shoulder shocked him out of the dreamless doze he had fallen into at the kitchen table. So much so that he almost knocked over the glass of black tea by his hand. Before it could tip, he snatched it back upright without spilling a drop. He gave her a weak smile.
Hey, quicker this time.
Yosef's wife gathered her thick housecoat around her and took the seat across from him. It was late, deep into the evening, and the house was unlit except for a single loom over the table. It had a sharp-edged shade around it that forced the cast light into a cone, reducing everything beyond it to vague shapes in the shadows.
Is Ivak up as well?
No, he's still asleep, and I'm pleased to see it. With everything that's been going on, he's had a lot of bad dreams.
Has he?
Yosef asked the question and immediately felt a flicker of guilt.
I've been absent a lot recently.
Ivak understands,
Rhenia said, cutting him off.
I didn't hear you come in,
she noted. Yosef nodded and resisted the urge to yawn.
You and the boy had already turned in. I didn't want to wake you, so I made tea.
He sipped at the glass and found the contents had gone cold.
And fell asleep in the chair,
she tutted quietly.
You're doing this too often these days, Yosef.
Rhenia brushed some stray threads of copper-coloured hair out of her eyes. He nodded.
I'm sorry, it's the investigation,
Yosef sighed.
It's troubling.
I've heard,
she said.
The Watchwire was running stories about it for a while, before the news from Dagone came in. Now that is all anyone is talking about.
Yosef blinked.
Dagone? He repeated.
The planet was a trading partner with Iesta Veracrux, a few light years distant down the spine of the Tibian sector's mercantile routes, in a system orbiting a pale yellow sun. By the interstellar scales of the Imperium of Man, Dagonet was practically a neighbor. He asked his wife to explain. Yosef and Daig had both been buried in research on the serial murders all day long, fruitlessly looking for information about Erno Sig, and neither of them had seen anything that wasn't a case file or medical report. For the first time since she had broken his dozing, Yosef realized that Rhenia was hiding something, and as she talked, it became clear. She was worried.
Some ships came into the system from Dagonet,
Rhenia began.
The Planetary Defense Force monitors couldn't catch them all. There were so many.
Yosef felt a peculiar thrill of fear in his chest.
Warships?
She shook her head.
Transports, liners, that sort of thing. All Dagonetti ships. Some of them barely made it out of the warp in one piece. They were all overloaded with people. The ships were full of refugees, Yosef.
Why did they come here?
Even as he asked the question, he knew what the answer was most likely to be. Ever since stories of the galactic insurrection had broken out across the sector, Dagonet's government had been noticeably reticent to commit on the subject.
They were running. Apparently there's an uprising going on out there. The population has split over their loyalty.
She said the word as if it was foreign to her, as if the idea of being disloyal to Terra was a totally alien concept.
It's a revolt.
Yosef frowned.
The governor on Dagonet won't let things run out of control. The noble clans won't let the planet fall into anarchy. If the Imperial Army or the Astartes have to intervene, there...
Rhenia shook her head and touched his hand.
You don't understand. It's the Dagonetti clans who started the uprising. The governor issued a formal statement of support for the War Master. The nobles have declared in favor of Horus and rejected the rule of Terror.
What? Yosef felt suddenly giddy, as if he had stood up too quickly.
The common people are the ones fighting back. They say there is blood in the streets of the capital. Soldiers fighting soldiers, militia fighting clan guards. Those who could flee filled every ship they could get their hands on.
He sat quietly, letting this sink in. There was, he had to admit, a certain logic to the chain of events. Yosef had visited Dagonet in his youth, and he recalled that Horus Lupercal was second only to the Emperor in being celebrated by the people of the planet. Statues in the War Master's honour were everywhere, and the Dagonetis spoke of him as the Liberator. As the historic record went, in the early years of the Great Crusade, to reunite the lost colonies of humanity, Dagonet languished under the heel of a corrupt and venal priest-king who ruled the planet through fear and superstition. Horus, at the head of his Lunar Wolves Legion, had come to Dagonet and freed a world, accomplishing the deed with only one round of ammunition expended, the single shot he fired that dispatched the tyrant. The victory was one of the War Master's most celebrated triumphs, and it ensured he would be revered forever as Dagonet's saviour. Small wonder, then, that the aristocratic clans who now ruled the planet would give their banners to him instead of a distant emperor who had never set foot on their world. Yosef's brow creased in a frown.
If they follow Horus...
Will Aesta follow suit?
Said Renia, completing his question for him.
Terra is a long way from here, Yosef, and our governor is no stronger willed than the rulers of Dagonet. And if the rumours are true, the War Master may be closer than we know.
His wife reached out again and took both his hands, and this time he noticed that she was trembling.
They say that the sons of Horus are already on their way to Dagonet, to take control of the entire sector.
He tried to summon a fraction of his firm, steady voice, the manner he had been trained to display as a reeve when the citizens looked to him in time of danger.
That won't happen. We have nothing to be afraid of.
Renia's expression, her love for him for trying to protect her there, but intermingled with stark fear, told him that for all his efforts, he did not succeed. The chemical snows of the Arctic zone, thick, feathery clumps tainted a sickly yellow from thousands of years of atmospheric contaminants, beat at the canopy of the aircraft. Out beyond the bullet-shaped nose of the transport, there was only a featureless cowl of grey sky and the whirling storm. Aristide Kell gave it a glance and then turned away, stepping back from the raised cockpit deck to the small cabin area behind it.
How much longer?
Said Tariel, who sat strapped into a thrust couch, a half-finished logica puzzle in his soft, thin fingers.
Not a long,
Kell told him, deliberately giving him a vague answer. The Vanus's face pinched in irritation, and he fiddled with the complex knot of the logica without really paying attention to it.
The sooner we get there, the happier I will be.
Nervous passenger?
The sniper asked, with mild amusement. Tariel heard it in his voice and fired him an acid look.
The last aircraft I was in got shot down over the desert. That hasn't exactly made me well disposed to the whole experience.
He discarded the logica, which to his surprise, Kell realized the Vanus had completed without apparent effort, and pulled up his sleeve to minister to his cogitator gauntlet.
I still don't understand why I'm needed here. I should have returned with Valdor.
The Captain General has duties of his own to attend to, said Kell. For now on, we are on our own.
So it would seem.
Tariel threw a wary look to the far end of the cabin, where the girl, Iota, was sitting. Tariel had placed himself as far away from her as it was possible to get, and still be inside the aircraft's crew compartment. For her part, the Culexus appeared wholly occupied with the pattern of the rivets on the far bulkhead, running her long fingers over the surface of them, back and forth. She seemed lost in the repeated, almost autistic actions.
Operational security, said Kell. Valdo's orders were quite clear. We assemble the team he wants, and no one must learn of it.
Tariel paused and then leaned closer.
You know what she is, don't you?
A pariah, sniffed the Vindicare. Yes, I know what that means.
But the Vanus was shaking his head.
Iota, is designated as a protophage. She's not human, Kel. Not like you or I. The girl is a replicae.
A clone? The sniper looked back at the silent Culexus. I would not think it beyond the works of her clade to create such a thing. Still, he wondered how the Genomasters would have gone about it. Kel knew that the Emperor's biologians were greatly skilled and possessed of incredible knowledge, but to make a living person whole and real from cells in a test tube.
Exactly, insisted Tariel. A being without a soul. She's closer to the Xenos than to us.
A smile pulled briefly at Kel's lips.
You are afraid of her?
The Infocyte looked away.
In all honesty, Vindicare, I am afraid of most things. It's the equilibrium of my life.
Kel accepted this with a nod.
Tell me, have you ever been face to face with one of the Eversaw?
Tariel's face went ashen, the tone of his cheeks paling to match the polar snows outside the flyer's viewports.
No,
he husked.
When that happens, Kel went on, then you'll truly have something to be afraid of.
That's where we're going,
offered Iota. Both of them had thought the girl to be wrapped up in whatever private reality existed inside her mind, but now she turned away from the bulkhead and spoke as if she had been a part of the conversation all along.
To fetch the one they call the Garantine.
Kel's eyes narrowed.
How do you know that name?
He had not spoken of the next assassin on Valdor's list.
Vanos are not the only ones who know things.
She cocked her head to stare at Tariel.
I've seen them. Eversaw.
Iota's hand strayed to her skull helm, where it rested nearby on a vacant passenger couch.
Like and like.
She smiled at the Infocyte.
They are rage distilled. Pure.
Tariel glared at the sniper.
That's why we're out here in this icy wilderness. To get one of them?
He shuddered.
A primed cyclonic warhead would be safer.
Kel ignored him.
You know the Garantine's name, he said to Iota. What else do you know?
Pieces of the puzzle, she replied. I've seen what he left behind. The tracks of blood and broken meat. The spoor of the Vengeance Killer.
She pointed at Tariel.
The Infocyte is right, you know. More than any one of us. The Garantine is a weapon of terror.
The matter-of-fact way she said the words made Kel hesitate. Ever since Valdor had appeared out there in the deserts with his commands and his authority handed down from the Master of Assassins himself, the Vindicare's sense of unease had grown greater by the day. And now Iota cut to the heart of it. They were lone killers, all of them in their own ways. This gathering together sat wrongly with him. It was not the way in which things were to be done. And somewhere deep in the back of his thoughts, Aristide Kel found he was also afraid of what such orders boded.
Vindicare!
He turned as the transport pilot called out his clade's name.
Approach control doesn't answer. Something is wrong.
Tariel muttered something about his cursed luck, and Kel brushed past him back into the cockpit. The pilot was already pushing the transport into a steep turn. Below them, distinguished only by a slight change in the tone of the chem snow, he spotted the mottled, lifeless landscape of the Actic Ranges through the spin and whirl of the blizzard-borne ice. There, beneath the craft, was a low blockhouse of heavy ferrocrete, distinguishable only by stripes of weather-faded crimson outlining the edges of it, and the steady blink of locator beacons. But where there should have been the hex shape of a landing silo, there was only a moor, belching black smoke and flickers of fire. Kel caught the tinny sound of panicked voices coming through the pilot's foxbeed, and as they banked, he thought he saw the blink of weapons discharges down inside the silo proper. His jaw stiffened. This was no chance accident. He knew exactly what had happened.
Oh, they woke him,
said Iota from behind, giving voice to his thoughts.
That was a mistake.
Take us in,
Kel snapped. The pilot's eyes widened behind his flight goggles.
The silo is on fire and there's nowhere else to set down. We have to abort.
The Vindicare shook his head.
Land us on the ice.
If I put this craft down there, it might never lift again,
said the pilot. And if... Kel silenced him with a look.
If we don't deal with this right now, by sunrise tomorrow, every settlement within a 100-kilometer radius will be a slaughterhouse.
He pointed at the snowfields.
Land this thing. Now!
Instead of returning home to the small apartment cluster where he lived alone, out near the western edge of the radial park, Dag Segan took a public conveyor to the old market district. At this time of night, none of the stalls were open to make sales, but they were still hives of activity. Men and women loaded produce and prepared for the dawn shift, moving crates on dollies this way and that across shiny tiled floors that were slick with sluice water. Dag crossed the covered market to the other conveyor halt and took the first ride that came in, irrespective of its destination. As the monorail moved along the line embedded in the cobbled street bed, he gave the carriage a long, careful sweep, running over the faces of the other passengers with a policeman's wary eye. There were only a handful of people, three teenagers in loaders' hoods, tired and serious-looking, an old couple bound for home, men and women in work cloaks. None of them spoke. They either stared into the middle distance or looked blankly out the windows of the conveyor. Dag could sense the tension in them, the unfocused fear. It manifested in short tempers and hollow gazes, brittle silences and morose sighs. All these people and everyone like them, all were looking to an horizon lit by the distant fires of war, and they wondered, when will it reach us? It seemed as if Aesta Veracrux was holding its collective breath as the shadow of the rebellion drew ever closer. Dag looked away and watched the streets roll by. He rode for three stops before disembarking once more. He took another conveyor back the way he came, this time stepping off the running board just as it pulled away from the halt before the market. The Reeve jogged across the road, throwing a glance over his shoulder to be certain he had not been followed. Then, his toque pulled low to his brow line, Dag vanished into an ill-lit alleyway and found his way to an unmarked metal door. A shutter opened in the door, and a round, florid face peered out at him. Recognition split the face in a broad smile.
Dag! We haven't seen you in a good while.
Hello, Nust,
he nodded distractedly.
Can I come in?
The door creaked open in reply, and he stepped through. Inside it was warm, and Dag blinked a few times, his eyes watering as the chilled skin of his face thawed a little. Nust handed him a tin cup with a measure of mulled wine in it, and the Reeve followed the other man down a steel staircase. A breath of gentle music wafted up on the warm air as they descended.
I wondered if you might have changed your mind, said Nust. Sometimes that happens. People question things after they take on the belief. It's like buyer's remorse.
He gave a dry chuckle.
It's not that, said Dag. It's just that I haven't been able to get here. It's the work,
he sighed.
I have to be careful.
Nust shot him a look over his shoulder.
Of course you do. We all do. Especially in the current climate. He understands.
Dag sighed, feeling guilty.
I hope so.
The staircase deposited them in a cellar with a low ceiling. Looms had been glued to the walls along the long axis of the chamber, and in rough rows there were a collection of seats. Some plastiform things pilfered from office plexes, others threadbare sofas from lost homes, a few little more than artfully cut packing crates, all of them arranged in a semicircle around a cloth-covered table. Red-printed leaflets lay on some of the chairs. High Reeve Cater Telemac would have given much to find this place. It was one of a handful, each concealed in plain sight across Iesta Veracrux. There was no identifying symbol to show it was here, no secret passwords to be spoken or special sign that would grant access. It was simply that those who were called to know these places found them of their own accord, or else they were brought here by the like-minded. And despite what the High Reeve insisted, despite all the hearsay and foolish gossip that was spread about what took place in such cellars and hidden spaces, there were no horrors, no murderous blood rites or dark ceremonies. There were only ordinary souls that made up the membership of the Theoge. That and nothing more. He thought on this as he rubbed his thumb over the smoothed gold of the Aquila talisman about his wrist. On the table there was an elderly holographic projector that flickered and hummed. A blue-tinted image of Terra floated above it, a time-lapse loop of the planet's day-night cycle. At the side of the projector was a book, open at a page of dense text. The book was made of common quality vine paper, and it had been bound without a cover. Daig understood that a friend of Noost's, who worked the night shift at an inkworks, had used cast-offs from other jobs and downtime between the print runs of paying customers to run out multiple copies of the document. The pages were careworn from many sets of hands upon them, and he wanted to pick them up and leaf through them, draw comfort from the writings. Daig knew that he only had to ask, and Noost would give him a copy of his own to keep. But to have the book in his home, somewhere it could be discovered by mistake, or worse, used to incriminate him by people who didn't understand the true meaning contained in it, he couldn't take the risk. Noost was at his side.
You timed it well. We were just about to have a reading. You'll join us, yes?
Daig looked up. There were only a few other people in the cellar, some of whom he knew, others not so familiar. He spotted a new face and recognized him as a Jaeger from the precinct. The man returned a wary look, but Daig gave him a nod that communicated a shared confidence.
Of course, he said to Noost.
A youth with a bandaged hand picked up the book and handed it to Daig's friend. On the front was the only element of adornment on the otherwise Spartan document. Picked out in red ink, the words Lectitio Divinitatus. If the Garantine had once possessed a true name, that time was long ago and of little consequence. The entire concept of a past and a future, these were strange, abstracted notions to the Eversaw. They were things that, if he had been able to stop to dwell on them, would have only brought ticks of confusion, and, as with all things about him, rage. The Eversaw existed only in a permanent state of the furious now, and matters of before and after were limited to the most transitory of elements. Before, just heartbeats earlier, he had beheaded a guard attempting to down him with some kind of heavy Weber cannon. In a moment more, he would leap the distance across the open space where the handling gantry for the flyers did not reach in order to land among the group of technicians who were fleeing towards a doorway. In these small ways, the Garantine allowed himself to comprehend the nature of past and future. But to go beyond that was pointless. It was the manner of his life that he existed in the thick of the killing. He had a dim understanding of the other times, the times when he would lie in the baths of amniofluids as the patient machines of his clade healed his wounds or upgraded the stimjectors and drug glands throughout his body, the times when, in the dreamless no-sleep between missions, hypnogoga data streams would unfold in his head like blossoms of information, target profiles linked to mood triggers that would give him bursts of elation for every kill, jolts of pleasure for each waypoint reached, jerks of pain if he deviated off program. These things had not happened here, though. He reflected on that as he completed his leap, his augmented muscles relaxing to take the impact of landing, the sheer force of his arrival killing one of the fleeing technicians immediately. As he spun about, the knife claws on his hands and feet opening veins, the grinning rictus of his steel skull mask steaming with splashes of blood, he searched for a program, for a set of victory conditions. There was none. Digging deeper, he reached for his stunted past. He remembered back as far as he could. An hour, perhaps? He replayed the moment. A sudden awakening. The transit cocoon that held him in its silent, womb-like space, where he could wait out the non-time until his next glorious release, suddenly broken. An error? Or something else? Enemy action? That assumption was the Garantine's default setting. After all, he reasoned, as much as he was able, that surely, if he had been awakened for any other reason, the hypnagogues would have ensured he knew why. But there was nothing. No parameters, only wakefulness. And for an Eversaur, to be awake was to be in the glory of killing. A cocktail of stimulants and battle drugs boiled through his bloodstream. Heavy doses of fury, spur, and psychon synthesized to order by the compact biofac implants in his abdomen. Under normal circumstances, the Garantine would have been armed with more than just his skin-planted offensive weapons and helm mask. He would have been sheathed in armor and arrayed with a suite of servo systems. That he did not have these only served to modify the killer's approach to his targets. He had taken and employed several light stubber guns, using each until the ammo drum ran dry, then making the weapons into clubs he used to beat his kills to the floor. But the stubbers were only good for a few hits before his violence broke them across the frame and he was forced to discard them. He punched a man with enough energy that it shattered his skull, and then he vaulted a makeshift barricade, moving faster than the men hiding behind it could aim. He killed them with their own guns and ran on, deeper through the complex. Parts of the building might have looked familiar to him if the Garantine had been able to stop the racing pace of his thoughts, if he had been able to slow his kill need for just a moment. But he could do neither. In the absence of orders, with no target to aim for, the Eversaur did what he was trained to do, and he would go on, killing here and then moving on to the next set of targets, and the next, forever in the moment. Afterwards, Daig felt refreshed by his experience, but he had not come to the meeting for personal reasons. While some of the others talked amongst themselves, the Reeve took Noose to one side, and the two men shared cups of the warm wine and questions. Noose listened in silence to Daig's explanation of his caseload, and at length he gave a nod.
I know, Ernosig. I guess that might be why you'd come to see me. His face was on the public watchwire. Said that he was sought after to assist in your inquiries.
Daig suppressed a wince. Lehmner, on Telemach's orders, had deliberately leaked Sig's image to the media in a ham-fisted attempt to flush him into the open. But if anything, it appeared to have driven the man deeper into hiding. Noost continued.
He's a troubled fellow, to be certain. Someone without a compass, you could say. But that's where the Theoge can be of help to a man. He learned of the text while he was incarcerated from a shiphand. Erno found another path with us.
He looked away.
At least, for a time, he did.
Daig leaned in.
What do you mean?
Noost eyed him.
Is that you asking, Daig Segan? Or is it the Centine?
Both, he replied. This is important. You know I wouldn't ask if it wasn't.
Aye, that's so. Noose sighed. Here's the thing. For a while, Erno was a regular fixture here, and he was trying to make something of himself. He wanted to make amends. Erno was working to become a better man than the angry, frustrated thug he'd left out there in space. It's a long road, but he knew that. And then he started to come around less often. When did this happen?
A few demi-lunas ago. Two, maybe. When I did see him, he was twitchy. He said that he was going to have to pay for what he had done. Noost paused, sorting through his thoughts. I got the impression that someone was, I don't know, following him. He was irritable, paranoid. All the old bad traits coming back to the fore.
Day rubbed his chin.
He may have killed people.
Noost gave the Reeve a shocked look.
No, never. Maybe once upon a time, but not now. He's not capable of that, not anymore. I'd swear that to the God Emperor himself.
I need to find Erno, said Daig. If he's innocent, we need to prove it. I need to protect all this.
He gestured around.
I found my path here. I can't lose it.
Daig imagined what might happen if Talamak or Lamna got hold of Sig, broke him in interrogation, and then found the door to this place. In their secular clinical world, there was no place for the revelation of the imperial truth, the undeniable reality of the Emperor's shining divinity. The church, such as it was, and all the others like it, would be torn down, burned away, and the words of the Lectitio Divinitatus that had so transformed Daig Segan when he read them would be erased and left unheard. They would use Sig and the crimes to excuse them as they put a torch to it all.
The Emperor protects, said Noost. And I'll help him do it. If you just give me the chance, insisted the Reeve. Just tell me where Erno Sig is hiding.
Noost finished his drink.
All right, brother.
Behind her, she heard the clattering thunder of autofire and more screams. Iota skidded to a halt on the cold metal floor and cocked her head, letting her skull helm's autosenses take readings and pass the analysis back to her. He was very close. She had attracted his interest by appearing in the middle of a companionway, letting him see her clearly and then breaking into a run. The Eversaw knew another assassin when he saw one, and she was without doubt the most serious threat vector the Rage Killer had encountered since his awakening. He was coming for her, but that didn't stop him from pausing along the way to dispatch any of the facility's staff who were unlucky enough to cross his path. The murderers of the Clade Eversaw were like that. For all their bloody violence and instinct-driven brutality, they were still methodical. They left no witnesses, nothing but corpses. Iota waited, rocking on her heels, ready to break into a run the moment he spotted her again. From what the infosite had managed to piece together from the base's cogitators, it seemed that there had been a catastrophic accident during the retrieval of the Garantine from one of the deep, cold isostalls beneath the mantle of the Actic ice. The cryopod containing the assassin in his dormant state had cracked a fluid line. The burst conduit sprayed super-chilled methylon across the handlers, flash-freezing them all in an instant. By the time another team had made it down to the transfer area, the pod had drained, and the Garantine was already awake. Even in his semi-dormant, unarmed state, they were easily cut down by him. The Clade's technologians made the fatal mistake of addressing the problem of the coolant leak first, an easy choice to understand, given that this particular facility housed another 9 Eversaw field operatives down in the isostores. Left unchecked, the Garantine's brethren would have eventually followed him into wakefulness. But the time spent stabilizing the storage compartments had allowed the Garantine to fully thaw and begin the business of terminating every living being in the facility.
Culexus, where are you?
Said Tariel, his voice a hiss in her helmet vox.
Area 8, Tier 1 facing west, she replied. Waiting.
I've accessed the main systems library, he told her,
clearly impressed with his own achievement.
I'm closing the pressure hatches behind him as he moves.
Iota glanced down at the multi-barreled combi needler fixed to her right wrist, considering it.
He's not an animal, Vanus. He'll know if you're trying to hurt him.
Just keep him reactive, came the reply.
She didn't say any more, because at that moment the Garantine came storming around the bend in the corridor, his thick-set, densely-muscled body rippling with exertion. Chugs of white vapour puffed into the cold air from behind his metal mask, and as he moved, Iota saw the places where his bare skin showed and the shapes of implants beneath. The Garantine was covered from head to toe with daubs of human blood. He halted, rumbling like an engine, and eyed her with a low chuckle. In one hand he had a stubber carbine, liquid dripping from the blunt maw of the barrel. She thought for a fleeting instant about attempting to reason with him, then dismissed the idea just as quickly. There were rumours that every Eversaw had an abeyance meme encoded into their brains, a nonsense string of words that would lull them into inaction, or even send them into neurodeath if spoken aloud. But if this were so, Iota was sure that the Rage Killer would have made certain any technologians in the base who knew the code were no longer able to voice it. The Garantine pointed the broken gun at her.
"You,"
he said thickly.
"Quick!"
Perhaps it was a threat, a promise that he was going to end her swiftly, or perhaps it was a compliment on her agility, acknowledging Iota as the first real challenge he had come across since awakening. It mattered little. In the next second, he was coming at her, charging like an enraged Grox. She fired a blast of glycerin needles at him, describing a seamless backflip to open the distance between them. The glittering shots clattered across the Eversaw's torso, burying themselves in the meat of his chest, but the Rage Killer only grunted and batted them away. Iota spun to a halt in front of a large oval exterior hatchway, as Tariel's voice reached her once more.
"Is he there?" came the urgent question. I'm having difficulty reading the location of the Garantine."
She nodded to herself. Among the many implants beneath the flesh of an Eversaw were passive sensing baffles that could confuse the detector heads of many conventional scanners.
"Oh, he's here," Iota told him. "He will murder me in less than 110 seconds.
The prediction was based on observing the other kills the Garantine had made.
"Working,"
said the Infocyte, a new urgency in his words.
"Take your time," she replied.
The Eversaw halted and cocked his head, considering her. Iota took a breath and drew in on herself. She let the force matrix built into the structure of her stealth suit come alive, allowing it to reach its web of influence beyond the real and into the ethereum of the warp. But the process was slow. Had she been fighting a psyker, she could have drained them dry in a moment, siphoned off their power for herself. But here and now, there was nothing but the commonplace energy of air and heat and life. She felt the eye of the animus speculum slowly iris open, but even as it did, she knew it would not be ready in time. The other assassin grunted out a laugh and stooped to rip a short stanchion pole from a support pillar, tearing it off in a flutter of sparks. He brandished the steel rod like a club and went for her. At once, the hatch at Iota's back groaned on heavy hydraulics and fanned open with a clatter of fracturing ice. A blast of polar air and windborne snow thundered in around her from outside. For a moment, the snowstorm whirled into the corridor, filling the space with whiteness. The energy inside the Animus was approaching readiness, but as she had predicted, the Garantine Killer had her range, and he did not hesitate again. Before Iota could release even a fraction of the Psi weapon's potential, he slammed the bar into her chest with such force that she flew backwards out into the snow-filled courtyard. Iota noted the snapping of several of her ribs with a disconnected understanding. She landed badly in a shallow drift of white and coughed up a stream of bloody spittle into her helmet. The fact she wasn't dead made it clear he wanted to toy with her first. They called him the Garantine because it was said he hailed from the Garant Span, an Oort cloud collective on the near side of the Perseus Null. A natural psychotic, he had killed everyone on his home asteroid, and all this as a child barely able to read. It was no wonder the Clade Eversaw had been delighted to take ownership of him. Iota struggled to get up, and through the optics of her skull helm, she looked to see another grinning rictus come into view. The Garantine grabbed her by the ankle and effortlessly threw her across the courtyard. This time the impact was lessened by a deep snowbank, but still the shock vibrated through her. She let out a tiny cry of pain. In her ear, the Vanus was jabbering something about closing the hatch, but that had no consequence to her. Iota focused on bringing the Animus to a firing state. If their plan failed, she would have to be the one to kill him, crushing his fevered mind with a blast of pure warp energy. The Eversaur bounded towards her, laughing, and at the last moment he leapt into the air. Time seemed to thicken slow, the hazy man-shape falling down towards her. Then she was distantly aware of a heavy report, and suddenly the Garantine's fall was deflected. He jerked away at a right angle, as if pulled on an invisible cord. Iota saw the steaming wound in the Rage Killer's chest as he stumbled back to his clawed feet, shaking off the strike. Her head swimming, the Culexus searched and then found the source of the attack. A shimmering white figure stood up atop one of the nearby blockhouses, a long rifle in his grip. The white coloration faded into ink black, as the Vindicare deliberately reset his camellia-line cloak to a null mode, allowing the Eversaur to see him clearly. He raised the rifle to his shoulder as the Rage Killer roared at him, and for the moment Iota was apparently forgotten. The Eversaur charged again, and the rifle shouted. The first shot had been a kinetic impact round, the kind of bullet that could shatter the engine block of a hover truck or reduce an unarmored man to meat. That had been enough to attract the Garantine's attention. The next shot whistled through the frigid air, blurring as it impacted the Eversaur's chest. The round was a heavy dart, fashioned from high-density glassaic. It contained a reservoir of gel within, pressure injected into the target's flesh on impact. But it was not a drug or filter. An Eversaur's body was a chemical hell of dozens of interacting combat medicines, and no poison, no sedative could have been enough to slow it. The gel matter in the rounds was a myofluid with a very different function. When exposed to oxygen, it created a powerful bioelectric charge, a single hit strong enough to stun an Ogryn. It was a non-lethal attack, and the Garantine seemed incensed by that, as if he were insulted that so trivial a weapon were being used on him. He tore out the dart and came on. Kel fired again, flawlessly striking the same spot, and then again, and then a third time. The Eversaur did not falter, even as crackles of blue sparks erupted from the weeping wound in his chest. For one moment, Iota felt a rare stab of fear. How many rounds did the Vindicare have in the magazine of his long rifle? Would it be enough? She ignored the Vanus shouting in her ear and watched as the crash of shot after shot was swallowed up by the hush of the falling snows. The Eversaur leapt up to where the Vindicare stood and swung a taloned hand at him, but his balance faltered, the war shot of a dozen darts pinning his flesh. The blow smashed Kel's rifle in two and sent the pieces spinning. Iota was on her feet, aiming the Animus. If she fired now, the Vindicare would be caught in the nimbus of the Psi Blast. But then the fight ebbed from the Eversaur assassin, and the Garantine staggered backward, finally succumbing to all the hits he had taken. He made a last swipe at Kel and missed, the force of the blow carrying him back off the roof of the blockhouse and down into the courtyard. Iota approached him carefully, loping low across the ground. She was not convinced. Behind her, the marksman came in to survey his work.
"Is he down?" she heard Tariel ask.
"For our sake," Kel muttered. "I bloody hope so."
Daig halted the ground car at the foot of the hill and killed the engine.
"We walk from here," he said,
the weak pre-dawn light giving his face a ghostly cast. Yosef studied him.
"Tell me again how you came across this lead," he said. Tell me again why you had to drag me out of my bed? A bed I've hardly had leave to be in these last few days, mind. To come out to a derelict vineyard while the rest of the city is sleeping?
I told you,
Dake said, with uncharacteristic terseness.
A source. Come on. We couldn't risk coming in by flyer in case Sig gets spooked. And he may not even be here.
Yusef followed him out into the cold air, pausing a moment to check the magazine in his pistol. He looked up the low hill. On the other side of heavy iron gates, what had once been the Blasco Wine Lodge was now a tumble-down husk of its former self. Gutted by fire a full 3 seasons ago, the site on the southerly ridges had yet to be reopened, and it stood empty and barren. In the dampness of the dawn air, the tang of fire-damaged wood could still be scented, drawn out by the moisture.
If you think Sig is in there,
Yusef went on,
we should at least have some support.
I don't know for sure, Dag replied.
Not an overly reliable source, then, said Yusef.
That earned him a sullen look.
Oh, you know what will happen if I breathe a word of this at the precinct. Lamna will be all over it like a blight.
He couldn't disagree with that. And if Lamna was involved and Dag's tip came to nothing, it would be the two Reeves who would suffer for it.
Fine. But don't keep me in the dark.
When Dag looked at him again, he was almost imploring him.
Yusef, I don't ask much of you, but I'm asking now. Just trust me here, and don't question it, all right?
He nodded at length.
All right.
They got into the vineyard through a broken stand of fencing, and followed the driveway up to the main building. Small branches and drifts of wet leaves dotted the ground. Yusef glanced to his right and saw where unkempt, blackened ground ranged away down the steep terraces. Before the fire, those spaces had been thick with greenery, but now they were little more than snarls of wild growth. Yusef frowned. He still had a 10-year bottle of Blasco Caskin Port at home. It had been a good brand.
In here,
whispered Dag, motioning him towards an outbuilding. Yusef hesitated, his eyes adjusted to the dimness now, and his sight picking out what did not fit. Here and there he saw signs of recent motion, places where dirt had been disturbed by human movement. Looking up from the gates, an observer would have seen nothing. But here, close up, there was evidence. Yusef thought about the Norte and Letigue murders, and he reached into the pocket of his coat for the butt of his gun, comforting himself with the steady presence of the firearm.
"We take him alive," he hissed back.
Dag shot him a look as he drew a thermal register unit from inside his jacket, panning it around to scan for a heat return.
"Of course."
They found their suspect asleep, inside the cooper's shack, lying in the curve of a half-built barrel. He heard their approach and bolted to his feet in a panic. Yusef put the brilliant white glare of his hand lantern on him and took careful aim with the pistol.
"Arno Sig," he snapped. "We are Reeves of the Centine and you are bound by law. Stand where you are and do not move."
The man almost collapsed, so great was his terror. Sig flailed and stumbled, falling against the side of his makeshift shelter before catching himself with an obvious physical effort. He held up his shaking hands, in the right, gripping the handle of an elderly fuel lamp.
"Have you come to kill me?"
he asked. It wasn't the question Yusef had expected. He had faced killers of men before, more often than he might have liked, but Sig's manner was unlike any of them. Dread came off him in waves, like heat from a naked flame. Yusef had once rescued a young boy held prisoner for weeks in a wine cellar. The look on the boy's face as he saw the light for the first time was mirrored now in Erno Sig's expression. The man looked like a victim.
"You are suspected of a high crime," Dag told him. "You're to come with us."
"I paid for what I did,"
he retorted.
"I've done nothing else since."
Sig looked in Dag's direction.
"How'd you find me?
I hid well enough so even he couldn't know where I was.
Yosef wondered who he might be, as Dag answered,
Don't be afraid. If you are innocent, we will prove it.
Will you?
The question was weak and fearful, like the words of a child. Then Dag said something that seemed out of place in the moment, and yet the words were like a calmative, immediately easing the tension in Sig's taut frame. Dag said,
The Emperor protects.
When Yosef looked back to Sig, the man was staring directly at him.
I've done many things I'm not proud of,
he told him.
But no longer. And not those things the wire accuses me of. I've never taken a man's life.
I believe you, Erno, said Yosef.
The words leaving his mouth before he was even aware of them forming in his thoughts. And the strangeness of it was, he did believe him, with a totality that surprised the Reeve with its strength. On some instinctual level, he knew that Erno Sig was telling the truth. The fact that Yosef could not fathom where this abrupt conviction had come from troubled him deeply, but he did not have time to dwell upon it. The roof of the cooper's shack was a shell of corrugated metal and glass, some of it warped or shattered by the passage of the old inferno. From nowhere, as the dawn wind changed direction, the musty air was suddenly full of noise. Yosef recognized the rattling hum of coleopter rotors a split second before harsh sodium light drenched the floor with white, the glare from spot lamps blazing down through the smoke-dirty glass and the holes in the roof. An amplified voice echoed Yosef's original challenge to Sig, and then there was movement. The Reeve looked up, shielding his eyes, and made out the blurs of Jaegers dropping from the hovering flyers, heavy guns in their grips as they fell on descender lines. He looked back and saw pure fury on Sig's face.
Bastards!
He spat venomously.
I would have come, but you lied. You lied!
Dag was reaching out to him.
No, wait!
He cried out.
I didn't bring them. We came alone.
Sig cursed them once again and threw the fuel lamp in his hand with a savage jerk. The lantern hit the ground and split in a crash of glass and fire, even as overhead the intact portions of the roof were breached by the Jaegers. As pieces of the roof rained down from above, the lamp's burning oils kissed the soiled matter and old spills on the floor, and a pulse of smoky flame erupted. Yosef pushed Dag aside as the new blaze rolled out, chewing on the piles of rotting wood and discarded sacks all around them. Dag tried to go after Sig, but the fire had already built a wall between them, and the droning throb of the coleopter blades fed it, raising it high. Sig vanished into the heat and the smoke. The Jaegers were disentangling themselves from their ropes as Yosef stormed over to them. One was already on the wireless for a firefighter unit. The Reeve saw Skelter's face among the men and grabbed him by his collar.
Who ordered you in?
He shouted over the sound of the rotors.
Who's the shit who ruined this?
But he knew the answer before he heard it.